So, like I said earlier, Mitch McConnell has decided that this would be a good weekend for a long weekend. You know, right at the end of the month, right when millions of Americans are worried that they're not going to be able to pay their rent by Monday. It's a good time to take a long weekend. Adjourn till Monday at 3 o'clock. Get well rested over the weekend. And look, you know, if I guess, you know, if you can get away with it, okay. But my mind keeps going back to all those folks who we've been talking about for months, who unfortunately, because of the colossal bungling of this virus, are now, well, now facing homelessness, now facing the potential of being kicked to the curb in the midst of a global pandemic. And we got a Senate that's going, hey, let's take a break. We need a break. It's just plain crazy. And here to share some thoughts on, well, McConnell's decision and also, you know, what we should have been doing all along on how we avert this crisis. And it's amazing to me how they always love to take us right to the edge, the ticking bomb, right to the edge of the abyss and looking in. That's why I've asked Alex Cawthorn-Gaines to come talk with us. She's a vice president for Poverty to Prosperity there at the Center for American Progress. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes, my pleasure.
So is it just me, or is it every, it seems like every time you get McConnell and the Republicans moving us right to the edge of the abyss, looking into the horrible, I mean, it just seems like time after time, you know, it takes me back to the Obama years, where every weekend seemed like an episode of 24.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, as I'm looking at this, and look, I'm furious that our Senate just decided that they're going to go take a long weekend. While, you know, the emails I'm getting from people going, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent, are very real, and these people are really struggling. I just don't know how tone deaf or careless. I don't even know the words for it.
I truly don't understand it. I mean, here we are approaching the fifth rent due, right, since the start of this pandemic. We know that eviction moratoriums are expiring. You know, rent is due literally in 2 days. I just saw some research that talked about how this pandemic had actually caused 40 million Americans to lose their homes. I don't know what more information, you know, these folks need to really do what we should have been doing some time ago. You know, we just wrote a piece or published a piece at the Center for American Progress, my colleagues Jaboa Lake and Rajani Frederick, which has really been calling for more relief in the form of emergency rental assistance, deposit utility assistance, you know, and these are all critical things. But I think what people don't even realize is that for folks who haven't been able to pay their rent during this pandemic while we've been facing these enormous job losses, these are folks that also have to pay back rent. So we're looking at a situation where come 2 days from now, we have folks who are going to be looking to not only pay August rent, but because of the expiration of the moratorium, they're going to be paying, you know, 3-4 months worth of rent. It is a crisis. We are truly on the verge of a tremendous historic eviction crisis in this country.
And I don't know. Since you bring that up like that, you know, it's even the people who, you know, took the moratorium on their mortgages. Well, they still have to pay that back. It's not like you got a free pass. And you're absolutely right. We've done nothing to actually help them. We stopped it for a couple of months. But, you know, I've heard stories of people saying, you know, come Monday, we're starting to evict people. Even mm-hmm. though, you know, we know that you're going to have to go through some kind of a court process. But, you know, there's that mindset out there that these landlords, they need their money too.
Right. I mean, one of the recommendations we've called for and that other folks have for some time is making sure we have both tenant and landlord assistance paired together. Right. There are certainly things that we should have done to fund those kinds of programs. And going back a second to eviction in the court process, one of the recommendations we've come out with recently is around the right to counsel, because let's be clear, less than 1%, possibly up to 10% of households that are facing eviction have representation in these eviction courts,
right?
But 90% of landlords do. And so you have a situation where people are not prepared to represent themselves in court. You know, they will be evicted immediately. They won't have other places to go. In some cases, perhaps they'll be able to double up with other relatives. But during a pandemic, when we're supposed to be social distancing, we're going to have people doubling up. That's, you know, housing is health. And these are the kinds of things that put people at greater risk during a time like this.
No, and the other part of this is, you know, I think we learned in 2008 and 2009 that when you throw people out of houses, when you throw them to the curb, you leave empty houses, and then they end up becoming dilapidated and end up needing to be torn down. There's a whole lot of bad here by kicking people to the curb, in my view. Well, there's got to be a way to move forward to make sure that, landlords are able to pay the bank back because the bank's hounding them, and that tenants are able to pay the landlords. Because, look, that's how our whole game is set up in this country. There's got to be a way to move forward without leaving all the houses empty and falling down while people are literally living in the streets.
Absolutely. Like I said, we really do call for providing jointly tied landlord and renter relief. And what we were specifically calling for in our report was a minimum of $100 billion in emergency rental and utility assistance, which, again, is for landlords and renters,
right.
And then also some additional funding for a number of the housing assistance programs that exist, because those for years have been, decades have been, you know, sorely underfunded. I mean, the challenge here is that it's not just about the pandemic and the economic harm and chaos that's been caused by a poor federal or lack of a federal response, I should say. It's decades of structural affordable housing problems, right? Like, these are long-standing problems. We have failed to invest the way we need to in affordable housing in this country, and now, you know, the reckoning has come.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, I was talking about this the other day with a friend who I said, you know, back when my grandparents came back from World War II, there was a glut of housing. That was, you know, sponsored by the government. There were these Levitt towns that were popping up all over the country, just not here in Pennsylvania and New York, but all over the country. They built, you know, reasonably sized, affordable housing for working class people to be able to own a home and not be saddled with a lifetime full of debt. And they were good, well-built homes, you know, still standing to this day, and they were affordable. And we've gotten away from that. I mean, the push is let the free market dictate and build these little McMansions that are poorly built, falling down, and horribly unaffordable.
Absolutely. There's just a structural issue here. And, you know, a lack of attention to what can be done with all of this vacant housing. I mean, we saw, I think prior to the pandemic, even in California, there was a situation where there were homeless moms that were occupying empty houses and being taken out in handcuffs from empty homes. And these are women who had babies. This is where we've gone as a society. It's just deplorable. And there are certainly things that we can be doing to repurpose that kind of housing, leave it affordable and accessible for folks. That's the other piece. It's like, we want to make sure we have accessible housing, healthy housing for people to live in. And so they're not just living in dilapidated, run-down, abandoned homes, right? That we're still investing in the quality of the housing stock.
I want to go back to something you said a minute ago, because I think it's important to bear out that, you know, when you end up going to, like, eviction court or any court, really, you know, the powers to be are you know, the powers are outweighed against working people because, you know, look, if you can't pay your rent, you're certainly not going to be able to hire a $300 an hour lawyer to help defend your rights. And I saw the other day that Representative DeLorio and Presley, along with Senator Harris, have come out with a piece of legislation to try and even some of that. And while I was all in favor, I said, no, this is a great idea, but how about we just take that money and pay people's rents? Why don't we do that first and then deal with the other thing? I'm curious your thoughts.
I absolutely could agree with that. I think in that bill that you referenced, they talk about legal representation, limits to damage of renters' credit, the right to counsel, collecting uniform eviction data. These are all things that are important, but there are other bills that are pending, including some from Representative Omar, Representative Waters, that are rent mortgage cancellation, emergency housing protections and relief. We need all of these things, right? We certainly need investments in right to counsel and things of that nature, so that because people are going to be going before the court, you know, and really be challenged. But we certainly need those strategic investments and rental assistance. And there are other pieces of legislation that are pending that do just that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, look, I'm all in favor of people having the access to legal counsel so that the playing field is fair. But in this moment, you know, the crisis is keeping people in their homes at this minute. Because my fear is what happens is the court system goes, we're overburdened, and they just start, you know, robo-signing stuff. Like, we've seen this movie before. I guess that's my problem.
That is a real fear. To the point that I made earlier, people have months of back rent that they're going to be having to pay. And, you know, without sufficient representation and also just being overwhelmed in court, I can see a situation in which there's just the movement toward uniform signing of these documents, right? Especially because some people don't even realize they need to be in court. I mean, this is why counsel is so important. Some people think they can ignore the letters that they get and, you know, just sort of see what happens when it comes to being served and hope that things work out in their favor. But this is why that assistance, you know, the representation, the rights of counsel is so important.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So walk me through this idea, because, you know, like I said, you know, you've got McConnell and the Republicans who have left. Was there something in the HEROES Act that addressed this? Is there something in the Senate bill that might address this? Because I didn't see it in the Senate bill. Is there a movement towards doing some of the things that you want to do?
You know, short answer to one of the last parts of your question, there is absolutely nothing in the Senate bill that addresses this problem, unsurprisingly. In the HEROES Act, there was a significant investment for rental assistance for a number of the things that we talk about, expanding and increasing housing insecurity protections, enhancing some of the anti-homelessness aid and protections, because we want to make sure that we're also making sure that people who are currently without houses have houses, right? So taking a housing-first approach and making sure that we're housing people by any means necessary during a pandemic. So there was some specific investments connected to that in HEROES. So, you know, we want to see that pass. The likelihood of that happening at this point is not a high one,
right,
which is truly unfortunate. It's the programs that people need the most, particularly the people who have been affected the most by this crisis, just are not being seriously enough considered in terms of the next steps when it comes to the relief packages, relief in quotes, packages that the Senate at this point, the set of things that the Senate is considering at this point. So, there is a movement afoot. I mean, I see, you know, I'm even just looking at Twitter, which I know is not a scientific thing. I see a lot of conversation happening nationally right now. People are really interested and engaged in this idea that this pandemic is really causing a potential eviction crisis. You see it in the media. So you see people talking about it. You see an appetite for it. You see a need for it. But the Senate is still choosing to ignore this. You know, the Senate can't even pass the unemployment insurance extensions, which is another issue, right? Like, beyond direct rental assistance and mortgage assistance, foreclosure assistance, people are losing their lifelines. Yep. I think I saw that right now, 15% of all the wages in our country are the emergency unemployment insurance extension. That is a little scary. I mean, that is gone as of, I believe, tomorrow. So that just also, you know, is contributing to this this wave of evictions, this crisis that we're facing right now that we're not prepared to respond to.
Yeah, which is why tomorrow is such a great day to take off and have a nice long weekend, maybe enjoy some of those three martini lunches. And and since they wanted to fatten the corporate dining account, because I guess we can do that kind of stuff, right? There's plenty of money for corporate America. There's plenty of money for the three martini lunches. We can build new jets and a new FBI building, but ensuring that families don't lose their homes, that doesn't seem very high on the priority. It seems like we've kind of mixed things up, and which brings me to the thing, my other outrage of this week, which was, you know, Donald Trump saying that he's going to save the suburbs, and I guess, you know, I have my view of what I think that means, but I'm curious, you know, as a housing expert, as someone who this is your field, when you hear Donald Trump say he's going to save the suburbs, what does that mean to you?
So many thoughts. At first, my brain literally exploded. You know, talk about a obvious dog whistle, right? Someone said yesterday to me, actually, that in this case, the dog whistle is a bullhorn when you're talking about racism and classism and pandering to what you think are largely white suburban voters. It also brings me back to the research that I did, a number of years ago around suburban poverty. Suburbs are incredibly diverse. There are suburban communities that are facing concentrated poverty, have been dealing with that for some time. And things like the AFFH rule, the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing rule, is critical because it was a tool or a mechanism to enforce fair housing and require these communities that get federal funds to evaluate what patterns of segregation are looking like, right? Where they're seeing that, where they're seeing a need for more community investment so that you can actually deal with the conditions that are connected to concentrated poverty. Like, this is a tool to really enforce the Fair Housing Act. It only existed from 2015 on. And so the other thing that made my brain explode is that this rule hasn't actually been in effect long enough to actually have any impact one way or another, right? happening in the suburb.
Absolutely. But what this was is two things. And I think you hit it. You went right where I went. This is, dog whistle with a blowtorch. And this is undoing anything that had Obama's name on it. Didn't matter what it was, good, bad, indifferent. If his name's on it, it's got to go.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was. And I think what people may not realize is, like, this is just one of several actions this administration is taking to dismantle protections that have been put in place and enhanced under the Obama administration. I mean, these are protections that are longstanding, that predate the Obama administration in some cases, but the rules that were put in to help protect the most vulnerable in a number of different housing programs have been dismantled over the last several years. And this is the one, this very wonky data. It's really like a rule focused on data collection. But he's using this, obviously, as a dog whistle to pander to who he thinks are largely white suburban housewives, right? Like, he's really stuck. The other thing that went through my mind is he's, like, stuck 50 years ago in his perception of, like, who folks are in the suburbs. It's really, truly ridiculous.
No, you're right. But here's the thing, and this is where, my mind went when I saw this. Because I grew up as a kid in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I grew up the minority in a minority community, and we were able to get a Section 8 housing voucher to move out of that housing project and into a suburb. So, I know a lot of people when they hear, we're going to protect the suburbs, they think that, it's an invasion of others. It's everybody. It's not just others. In fact, I had a former congressman on the other night who said, look, something like 55% of white people use Section 8. It's that skewed. And, so it could be you. And this is, again, another one of those moments where you go, but the person who it could be benefiting is the person that he's targeting to use. It's really just nuts.
It absolutely is. And it seems like, at least I guess in my protective progressive bubble, it seems like people see through that. But I know there are probably a whole section of voters who this speaks to because they just don't understand the nuance or care to and deal with their own personal prejudices and biases. And he plays into that, right? Yeah. He plays into people who fear the other.
They're out there.
They're absolutely out there, and people who fear losing power. It was absolutely wild seeing that tweet from the president yesterday.
Let me ask you this, Alex, because, I've had a couple of conversations with people about Section 8 vouchers here lately, and it's their view that, it's a bad idea. We shouldn't be enriching landlords and people like Donald Trump who have abused this system for years. We should be scrapping the whole thing and moving to actual giving people homes. It seems pretty simple in places like Utah, where they have homeless programs that actually give people places to live instead of going through these really wild roundabout ways of getting aid to folks, that it's actually cheaper and more direct. Is that a possible path forward? So maybe by Trump, drawing attention to this, maybe we move into a direction where we scrap the whole thing and we do something better?
My hope is really a couple things. I'd say, I want to see more creative solutions to our housing crisis. I think in the meantime, because of the logistics of setting up these kinds of programs, and I think about areas where there's a lot of housing density and insufficient housing stock, and how do you sort of, is there any housing stock available to repurpose to give to people, and what does that mean? What does that look like? The reality is the Section 8 program is truly a mess. I mean, you have people who have been on waiting lists for years for that program, for assistance through that program. So it doesn't even help all that it really needs to help, right? Its reach is really limited. But for those who do receive those vouchers, they're lifelines. So I would say that we need to work on plugging these holes in our safety net and invest more in these programs and also make sure we're collecting data so we can understand, how people are being housed, where they're being housed, what biases are coming into these decisions around these programs and who receives access to that money, as the landlords in particular, while also thinking through what kinds of creative solutions we can have in place that will make sure people have homes. We want people to be in homes. We want housing first. And so, in my mind, that's a potential solution. But, like, the logistics, the policy hooks, the practice, all of that, that's where it becomes unclear, right? Like, it's going to take some time to move something like that forward.
Right. So we don't scrap what we've got until we've got something in hand. So last Absolutely. Question I've got for you. Marching orders between now and Monday, because evidently the senators have got time on their hands. Maybe a little golf with Trump. Who knows? Any suggestions on what folks should be doing between now and then?
I mean, if we're talking between now and Monday, a really simple thing would be to extend this eviction moratorium and expand it beyond federal properties. I mean, I think one of the challenges with the eviction moratorium as it stood was that it only applied to properties with federal mortgages, which is only about 30% of renters, basically, that were protected by that, if I have that data correct. So one simple thing, in my mind anyway, would be to expand eviction moratoriums. And it's not just at the federal level. There are actually, I think, at least 29 states that had those in place. And a number of those states have also let them expire without a real plan for helping people catch up on their, their pay or what have you, their income, so that they can pay all their back rent. So, in my mind, it's both the federal government and state governments, localities really need to think through how they can expand those moratoriums and make sure that give people a chance to actually pay back their rent. There's a whole host of other programs that need investment. People need food stamps. People need, unemployment insurance. I want to see all of that continue. But in a world where you need something that can be done fairly quickly, extending those moratoriums is the right thing to do. We are coming up in 2 days having people, not being able to meet this month's rent, and potentially, this is the fifth rent that they're not able to pay. Like, something has to be done. And I think that eviction moratorium is critical.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. If you've got time, call your senator, yell at their office, do it. Be nice to start, and then yell if you have to. But I say slam their phone lines early, often, email, all that stuff, because this is ridiculous that they went home and left these folks in the lurch. Alex, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Great work you guys do there. I appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you so much.
Good stuff. Alex Cawthorn Gaines, Vice President of Poverty to Prosperity program there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. You want to check out their piece, Kicking Folks Out While They're Down. Highly suggest taking a look at it. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time.